Welcome to episode 22 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. I'm Eric Barzeski. Joining me as always, Jeff Smith from Washington.
Hello.
Hello. We're going to get right into things here in our off-the-tee section. Christy Kerr has come back from four strokes behind to win her seventh career LPGA tournament. Kind of a slow start for Kerr this year, but she's kicked it up a little bit in the recent weeks, obviously including this win. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I think it's a great win for Christy. I really like her as a player, and I think she has, I think she just stepped it up and done a great job. You know, I love to see Christy win.
Some of the people who played well last year, Paula Creamer, Lorena Ochoa's course is playing well, but Paula Creamer really not playing to the level that she played at last year, kind of having a slump. Christy Kerr was in a bit of a slump earlier this year after having a fairly good 2005 season. But Lorena Ochoa really stepped it up this year so far. Monica Sorenstam not really stepping it up this year so far. Her world rank right now is still 17.66 points, which leads Paula Creamer by pretty much double. But she's fourth on the money list with 475,000, while Lorena leads with $745,000. Is Annika Sorenstam's, where is she going this year?
Well, she certainly has to turn it around. As, you know, as we talked about last week, maybe the week before, she has really not come out and been the same Annika. Her putting is just kind of so-so, and her ball striking is just not what it's been. So she really surprised me. I didn't expect her to kind of fall this far this year.
Does she deserve a twofold advantage in the world rankings?
Well, I think it's harkening back to the last, 5 years. She has just completely dominated women's golf. I mean, utterly dominated. Well,
the rankings go back 2 years, so.
Okay, well, for the last 2 years, she's done the same, dominated. And so, yeah, I mean, it's the same on the men's side.
Where will she be at the end of the year?
It's hard to tell.
I'm thinking she'll still be leading, but by a point or two, or?
She's going to still be leading, but I don't know. How many top tens does this gal have?
Granted, we're talking about someone who's fourth on the money list, so really not having a terrible year by any stretch, but it is Annika, so the bar is set quite high.
Yeah, Ochoa is the one to follow this year. She's just come out on a tear.
And Galvis has kind of cooled down after starting out really, really well. Someone who's not quite on a tear, or someone who's not quite set the bar terribly high, Michelle Wee accomplished a goal. She made a cut playing against men ranked like 800 in the world. I think someone figured it out. The average world ranking of the players that made the cut in the SK Telecom Open was 600-something.
Wow.
So, really not playing against the best of the men. She finished tied for 35th. Sayri Park played a couple years in a similar event and finished tied for 10th. Not exactly the strictest, toughest competition.
I think it's a shame. I think that what we're seeing now, this is almost kind of a metaphor on her goals. I mean, her goal has been to make a cut in a men's event on the PGA Tour. She wants to play in the Masters. That's her big goal. I think she might honestly think that she can contend in a men's event. What she's got to do is go play the LPGA, like we've all been saying for however long. And like I said, this is a little bit of a metaphor on what her goals are like. So she's making all this effort to compete with the men, but it really is totally irrelevant, and she's just kind of gone off the rails here. I think she's really missing what she could do in terms of true accomplishments.
Put that in mind, I'm not sure that a number of things. I'm not sure that they're her goals, per se. I think her parents still have a slightly more influential role in her decisions as a professional golfer than they may lead on. And number two, she's a professional without a tour, so she kind of has to play wherever they'll take her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's of Asian descent, so playing over there, she signed a $3 million real estate deal or something. A real estate developer signed her for a $3 million advertising deal while she was over there. So, you know, certainly worth the trip. But it's the whole thing about, this is our goal. My goal is to make the cut in a men's event. Why not just say, hey, I'm playing wherever they'll take me so I can make some money and get some experience.
Right.
We'll talk about whether Michelle Wee should be given an exemption to play the LPGA Tour or be granted a membership later on in the show. For now, we'll move on. Leave Michelle Wee alone for a little bit. The Big Five is now more like the Big Four or the Big Six or the Big Four plus One, because Jim Furyk has passed Ernie Els for the fifth spot, Ernie falling to sixth in the world rankings. Top four, of course, still being Tiger, Phil, Vijay, and Retief Goosen. Furyk kind of getting the monkey off his back, was 1-6 in playoffs, hadn't won a playoff in 10 years. Finally won at the Wachovia, where he lost in a playoff last year, beating Trevor Immelman on the first hole with a par. Congrats to Jim Furyk, and will Els get back into the top five?
Yeah, Els is going to do it. He's really just recovering from his knee injury. I don't think he's really regained his form. Well, obviously hasn't regained his previous form. And it's just a matter of time for Els. I mean, he's a dedicated player. He's a guy who's, you know, he's a great competitor. But Jim Furyk has shown, you know, what a great player he is. I think, you know, there were some doubters out there when he lost to Aaron Baddeley a couple of weeks ago.
Right, missing a couple 8-foot putts on the last couple of holes.
Yeah, which, you know, in retrospect is pretty understandable. We're all going to miss some 8-footers.
It's bound some.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, Jim's had a great season, and he's finally won again. So, what was his last win in 2004? So, it had been a while for him, but, you know, I think this is, again, another vindication for Jim.
Yeah, I believe he won something last year, but Sergio Garcia also dropped from 6th to 7th in the standings. If you look at the standings, though, Sergio Garcia's up there in the top 5, or the top 6 now. Tiger Woods is the youngest by 5 or 6 years, so in the next 3 or 4 years, I think we'll really start to see a lot of turnover because, you know, VJ's is 40 or something. Phil's 36, Ernie's 34, 35, I believe. Retief's up there. So, you know, Jim Furyk isn't a spring chicken by any means. So we're going to see some turnover in the next 4 or 5 years where finally some young people might bubble up. Of course, they'll be 34 themselves by then, but it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. Something we all like to keep an eye on, though. Augusta National, you have a new chairman. What's your take on what you've read about Billy Payne so far?
Well, Payne is cut out of that Augusta mold. Right. You know, I don't think they're going to put anyone in there that is going to really shake the boat up too much. There's an expectation on some people's parts, whether it's Martha Burke or the media or whoever it is, that an Augusta chairman is going to step in there and immediately elect or bring a woman into the fold. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the kind of person that I would expect these people to elect.
Right.
So no real surprise.
He's a little younger than Hootie. He apparently doesn't pronounce things like tournament, and he misses some of the old, we'll be nice to Hootie and call it charm that Hootie had. Again, being nice. But he's immediately already said he had a press conference to announce that he was the chairman for 45 minutes, which is something Hootie really never did. Hootie had his Wednesday thing at the Masters, and that was pretty much all you'd hear from Augusta all year.
Mm-hmm.
In this press junket thing last week, Billy Payne said that they were going to make some changes to the course again, but they were going to lengthen some of the tee boxes to make them lengthen them forward so that, you know, on windy days or something, they could play 15, 20 yards further forward. Brings a couple of the holes into the... They like to have 20-yard tee boxes, I guess, on most of the holes, so brings a couple of those into play. They're going to widen the fairway on 11 to the right, where they planted a bunch of trees, and under those trees, they're going to take the rough out and put pine straw in. A few changes already in the works. One of the interesting things, too, is that he's kind of brought the issue of having a Masters tournament ball back into play by saying that he's kind of getting tired waiting for the USGA to do something about it. You know, the interesting thing there being that 3 high-ranking USGA officials are, of course, members of Augusta. We'll see how that plays out. But already a kind of a big change, and yet the more things change, the more they stay the same as far as towing the company line. So,
yeah,
be interesting to see how Billy Payne works out. I ran for chairman's job, and I didn't get it. So
they didn't take it?
No.
So total shock.
I know. I mean, I said tournament in the interviews and everything.
Then they were like, oh, he's trying too hard.
Yeah, that was probably it. I'll try again in a couple of years. We'll be right back after this ad from Titleist and a Golf Gods segment about Izod. Stay with us.
In the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid too.
Keep it simple, play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative, stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, don't mock me. For well over 60 years, the Izod name has been associated with great-looking casual sportswear. In 1951, when Rene Lacoste donned the famous knit sport shirt, Izod became the knit shirt of choice for celebrities and sportsmen alike. The new Izod G Golf line of apparel draws on the famous Izod heritage with its cool, casual, and stylistically updated golf clothes. It's actually able to recapture some of the cachet which made it famous. A Golf God's favorite is the surprisingly plush Izod G Cool mock short sleeve. For $30, this is one great golf shirt. The 56% cotton, 44% polyester blend provides a solid moisture-wicking base, yet still maintains the feel of a top-quality combed cotton t-shirt. The polyester also keeps it wrinkle-free and looking fresh enough to wear to the office in the summer. The shirts are sized generously, so if you are a tweener size, like sometimes you wear a medium and sometimes wear a large, you can opt for the smaller size and be confident the fit will be comfortable and not too tight or sloppy looking. These mocks feature a two-tone look with a darker colored side panel. This gives the shirts a sporty look without looking techie geekish. Wash after wash, mine still looks great. I opt not to dry mine as they tend to air dry quickly as well. You can find this shirt and more Izod G golf apparel at Golf Gods, the official online pro shop of thesandtrap.com. Now back to Eric and this week's podcast.
Welcome back. We appreciate that word from our sponsors. We wanted to jump right in and talk about Vijay Singh. We have a topic at the forum, which we'll provide in the show notes, where someone is asking, is Vijay showing his age? And after 2004, obviously we expect a powerhouse in Vijay Singh. It's been a while since this guy's won, Eric.
It has. He has yet to win this year. Won one time, I believe, last year in the Buick early in the year, but kind of fell into a slump at the end of last year. Really hasn't picked it up this year. And by slump, we mean that he was pretty much finishing in the top 10 in every tournament he played in until recently. Yeah. I think his worst finish was a tie for 24th until he fell to a tie for 35th or something. Bear in mind, we're talking about a slump of that proportion. Not exactly it's not in fear of losing his card next year or anything like that.
Right.
But a slump for Vijay is not having a win. And he seems to be in a slump since sometime last year. And whether it's age or whether it's, you know, last year, beginning of this year, it was kind of his putting stroke seemed to be a little off again. Then he said, I'm working on my swing a little bit, making some changes. Vijay is not the type that has had, he doesn't have a swing coach or a teacher of any kind, so he works on it himself. So whether or not that's playing into it, you know, how much his age really has to do with it, I don't know. I mean, he's in great physical shape. He's in the workout trailer twice a day. Every day. I don't know that it's his age.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of wins left in him. I think he just needs to make a little adjustment. One of the things that I read someplace is that it's possible that Vijay has been using a 47-inch driver.
He's used it a few times.
I'm just wondering if that is also kind of playing into the equation there.
I know he's tried it a few times, but I think he said that it's a little bit, he can't control it obviously as well. He gets 20 more yards out of it, but he can't control it quite as well. And Vijay was really one of the first to, you know, kind of bomb it out there and wedge it or whatever from the rough. Mm-hmm. Was really one of the first. And he's kind of famous for hitting driver, even when Tiger Woods will hit a 3-wood. So, could be a part of it, but I think he's gone back to the shorter models. But even if he's, like, at a 46 or a 45, a little bit longer for him, could be playing a role there. You're right. So, we shall see. I think we both expect him to come out of the slump, though, by the end of the year. And, again, if the slump is, you know, finishing T8 each week, I'm pretty sure most guys out there would take it.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing him start winning again.
All right. We'll be right back after this ad from Titleist with our Beating Balls segment. Again, stay with us.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. This is our Beating Balls segment, a quick question and answer kind of segment that we almost never keep quick. So, anyway, here we go. Making the Ryder Cup or a President's Cup team used to be worth a two-year exemption. That's been taken away. Good move or bad move on the PGA Tour's part?
I think it's a poor move. I think they should have kept it. I think it's a great thing. If you qualify to play on these teams, then you should be given a two-year exemption. It's an honor, and I think it was a right thing.
Well, a lot of the people didn't qualify to play. They were chosen to play. This article brings up the case of Trevor Immelman, who Gary Player picked him. Trevor, being a fellow South African, was 22nd or something in the points list, but Gary Player picked him to play on the President's Cup team. Immelman was given a two-year exemption to the PGA Tour because of that. Paul Eisinger was picked to play in 2001 and was given an exemption through 2004 because it wasn't played till 2002. You know, there are some people who don't qualify for the Cup teams, but are still given exemptions because they're a member of the team.
So I think, well, these are two shady examples and probably good examples on the other side of the case. But I think, again, there's enough prestige playing in this event that if you play on it, I think you should be given an exemption, regardless of the fact that you have a couple of examples where people who didn't, you know, for instance, Paul Eisinger finished 169th on the money list, but then he was given an exemption because he played on, what is it, a Ryder Cup here.
Right.
But I still think that the exemption should be given. That's just me.
Well, Jay Haas, you know, won the last two. He's only on the, he only has status on the PGA Tour because he was on the Ryder Cup team in 2004, picked by Hal Sutton. I'd go one further and say that if you win on a Champions Tour, you should be given an exemption for maybe even a month after your win on the PGA Tour, just to get some of those guys to come back, and it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Most of them, I think, would opt to stay on the Champions Tour. I don't see Jim Thorpe or, you know, some of the older guys especially coming back to play on the PGA Tour, but a lot of them have relatives on the PGA Tour, so it might be nice to play in a tournament with them. So
yeah, and you talk about bringing attention to the PGA Tour. If you do that, it's going to be noticed. So Jim Thorpe's back, or Hale Irwin, or whoever it is, I think it'd be a great thing.
Michelle Wee, again, another article saying that the LPGA should wise up and give her status on the LPGA Tour, make an exception basically for her and waive the 18-year-old rule that they've similarly waived for people like Morgan Pressel and stuff. Yes or no?
Well, there's certainly precedents for it. We've seen that happen before.
Right.
Part of me just wants to see the circus sideshow that is Michelle Wee right now, traveling all over the world. And maybe they ought to hold off. And maybe when she's 17, 17 and a half or whatever, give her an exemption.
Yeah.
But make some time now for her to just wait.
Carolyn Bivens, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, said, "When these girls come out on tour, I want to make sure they are out here 15 or 20 years. I don't want them to come out when they are 14, 15, or 16 and burn out and only be with us a few years. Trust me, I want Michelle Wee on the LPGA for a long, long time." Well, it'll be probably a year longer if you let her in now. I don't see that, you know, an extra year is going to really burn her out, especially when she's traveling to Asia to play in SK Telecom Opens. It'd be a lot easier for her to travel around the U.S. and play in a couple events. And Michelle Wee is certainly an exception. I don't think that in 50 years we've seen someone this young have the talent that she has. So I don't think you're setting a precedent by letting her in. I don't think that next year you're going to have 40 16-year-olds, because none of those 40 are going to be able to say, "I'm as good as Michelle Wee." So, you know, I say let her in, play, capitalize. It's your first year as commissioner. Let her in, and certainly it's going to help you out, because, you know, the press is going to have a field day with it. The LPGA is going to rise in status and stature and coverage and everything. So I don't see it as a losing proposition at all. John Daly, is he a liar?
We had a couple of really interesting articles here. Obviously, it'll be in our show notes, but I don't think so.
This article, John Hawkins, the senior editor of Golf World, kind of says the $50 to $60 million that John says he lost in gambling really isn't even possible. He hasn't made it that much money to lose it all. Once you factor in ex-wives, taxes, caddy fees, travel expenses, etc. Basically, he's saying there's no way John could have lost that much money because he didn't have that much money. So is John Daly a liar?
I think John Daly has a Teflon skin. Just stuff bounces off this guy. I am sitting here reading this article. I thought about this a little bit, and for some reason it just doesn't stick.
Right.
Maybe he is. Maybe there's going to be some big revelation and people are going to crunch the numbers and find out, it's going to affect John if he does that. But it's just something genuine about this guy. So I don't know. I'm going to have to wait on this one.
Yeah. Well, I don't really care if he lost 50 or 60 or $10 million. He lost a lot of money gambling, and that's the story as far as I'm concerned. Not one I really even care much about. But another article here says the PGA Tour needs to suspend it, John Daly.
Yeah.
If you were the commissioner, would you suspend John Daly?
No.
Conduct unbecoming a professional golfer.
Well, one of the bylines in his book, and I'll just read this from the article. The name of Daly's book is called My Life In and Out of the Rough. It should be called I'm a Big Fat Gluttonous Gambling Boozing Grunting Snorting Sexist Pig. I don't know. I don't think that's true. I don't think we see that. I think what we see in John Daly is a guy who, he's got some issues, and he should probably be careful with it. But I don't think it's gone that far.
Okay. Would you consider yourself a John Daly fan?
Yeah, I think I would be. I just like John.
Okay. I consider myself not to be. I don't actively speak out against him, but at the same time, I've said on the forum that I think John Daly may have more actual talent, raw talent, than Tiger Woods. But he's given that, he's a perfect example of a good thing gone to waste. Horrible, horrible waste through choice or genetics or however you want to put it.
Mm-hmm.
The choices or the things that have happened to him in his life have led him to basically waste what I feel is a tremendous amount of talent. I look at him as a valuable lesson, but I don't know that I really respect John Daly. I don't know that I identify with him. It's tough for me to cheer one way or the other. You know, I won't cheer against him, but I'm not really a fan.
Yeah, obviously I don't cheer for his indiscretions on and off the course, but there's something about John that I like, and for some reason I'm able to give him a pass for whatever reason.
Well, you and a lot of people. I mean, he certainly still got a very fanatic fan following, so fanatic fan can I say that?
I don't know.
It's my show. I get to say that, right?
Darn it.
Yeah. There we go. And that concludes my show. Our show, your show, everyone's show. The Golf Talk Podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Find us online at thesandtrap.com. We have a forum available also at thesandtrap.com/forum, F-O-R-U-M. Drop by, say hi, check us out. You too could be on our podcast if you just download Skype. You too can be saying things like fanatic fans.
You can. Join us.
Or fanatical fans, whatever I said. I don't know. That does it for episode 22 of the Golf Talk Podcast. Join us again next Friday for episode 23.
Strangely enough.
Oddly enough. So that does it for episode 22. Thanks again. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.